This is a meeting of the Cleveland Park Citizens Association that was held on Thursday, June 16, 2011, about 6:45 in the evening at the Cleveland Park Library. Approximately 21 people were in attendance. Susie Taylor spent most of the meeting as president, giving a state of the CPCA report. The meeting was approximately an hour and 35 minutes in length.
I want to welcome you to the 2011 annual meeting of the Cleveland Park Citizens Association on June 16th, 2011. I'm Susie Taylor, and I am the president of the Cleveland Park Citizens Association, and I'm delighted to see all 16 of you here. Next year, I'm hoping to have 26, and then maybe the year after that, we can have 46. But anyway, quality is what counts, not quantity, and we're very happy that you're all here. Thank you. I wanted to start this evening out with a state of the Cleveland Park Citizens Association address, just to give a little recap of what it's been like to work with the leadership team that over this past year, what we feel were our achievements and our successes, and what we feel in the euphemism of Washington, D.C., what needs some improvement, and also to ask for your guidance on what you think we can do better for the years ahead. So I'm going to start with my little state of the CPCA. When we convened at our first membership meeting of the season, which was last September, we presented three primary goals that we hope to achieve throughout the course of this year. The first was to finish the revision of our articles and bylaws. We began that process 2 years ago under the leadership of John Chellin, as serving as president and also serving as the chair of the governance committee, who put together a wonderful group of people, several of whom are sitting in this room, who worked very hard to take kind of a long-range, comprehensive look at the issues with how you govern a membership organization such as our Cleveland Park Citizens Association. And from that, this group produced several white papers. We had lots of back and forth with membership. And at the conclusion of John's tenure and the beginning of this year's administration, Ann Hamilton took over the role as chair of the governance committee. And she began to work on a draft of the bylaws. And you all in this room, I think, know the story well. That draft was circulated numerous times. There were several meetings where all members were invited to attend. There were lots of requests over our listserv and through the website for membership input. And the result is that we actually were successful in drafting and passing new articles and bylaws for our association, which is very thrilling. And from my perspective, the most significant changes that these new bylaws present for us is, number one, we now have two membership categories. We have an active membership category and an associate membership category. So we can have people who are very much interested in and invested in what happens in Cleveland Park that are not actually residents within our boundaries, but who want to attend, who want to be part of the conversation, attend meetings, be part of the conversation, and who will have a voice but not a vote. The second is that we increase the size of our leadership team. We have been operating with an executive committee of 7 plus the 8th, which is the prior year's president. Now we're going to be operating with a leadership team. How am I doing? Okay. Of 11. And this is very important because we need to spread the love. There's a lot of work that gets done, believe it or not, to run an association like this, and there's so much that we are excited about achieving for this neighborhood, and it's awfully, we just needed to spread the love and get more people involved. So I'm thrilled with the fact that we have a larger leadership team. Another thing that the bylaws do is that they expressly call for active participation from members, and this is done primarily through a committee format. There's been a lot of discussion about top-down versus bottom-up generation of ideas and information, and we're hoping that by emphasizing membership participation through initiative and setting up their own committees, that we're going to get more active, engaged participation from the members, and certainly we welcome that. The bylaws allow for much greater flexibility in the administration of this association. We're no longer wedded to, for example, holding our annual meeting on the first Saturday of the month of June. So we have a lot more flexibility. We can hold elections if we choose to. We can allow online voting in elections. So there is more flexibility going forward, and hopefully that means that these bylaws will suit us well for many, many years to come. The bylaws require the leadership to present a work plan to the membership at the first meeting of the season, which is in September, and a budget that corresponds with that work plan. We more or less did that last year in September, but now it's actually formalized in the content of the bylaws. It's a requirement. And that work plan and budget are both presented to the membership and require membership approval. So it's a way to hold leadership accountable. What did we say that we hope to achieve? And most of that is going to be informed by input from the membership. What did we say we hope to achieve, and how did we do? It enables the entire membership to measure the success of its leadership on an annual basis. The second goal that we had was to engage and expand our membership. And we've sort of done okay with that. I think we've done a little better. We had at 2009, when we had that enormous surge in membership, we surged up to somewhere between 850 and 900 members. We've settled back down to around 530, which is somewhat of an increase above where we had been historically prior to the surge in 2009. So it's a little bit of an improvement, but I think we have a long ways to go. I mean, there are 3,000 people who live in the boundaries of CPCA, and we should have 3,000 households. We should have more people as members and more people who feel that this association is relevant to their lives. We revived Cleveland Park Day, which was just such a kick, so much fun. Lots and lots of people, several of whom are in this room, participated. We have President and Mrs. Cleveland, for example, the woman who did all of the signs, is here in this room. People who participated in the finance, we had runners, we had money counters. And I'm utterly delighted to say that Pam Corbell and Jeff Davis, Jeff is on vacation this week with his family and can't be here, but they have volunteered to take on the leadership for Cleveland Park Day 2011, which will be hopefully now for time immemorial, will be the first Saturday of the month of October every single year. So this year it will be October 1st. And one of the things that Cleveland Park Day did was not only to engage and hopefully expand our membership, but it also helped solidify a very good working relationship with the Cleveland Park Business Association and the entire business community, and that was a total pleasure. Another way that we had hoped to engage and expand membership was through by facilitating and supporting membership initiatives. I don't know if any of you recall, but we had a meeting in October that was modeled something like a job fair, where we had gone through all of the membership renewal forms over the past 2 years. We had kept a tally of what members expressed interest in what type of initiatives. In some cases, we called people who were interested in that, and then we had in this very room a section that met over here who was interested in aging, a section who met over there interested in greening, a section who met over here was interested in farmers markets. And we were quite successful with aging. We've had a long time success now with greening. I wanted to bring you, just take this moment to bring you a little bit up to date with that. Aging is kind of an interesting concept. It's a bit of a hybrid because unlike perhaps other CPCA membership initiated ideas, in order for aging, and do you all know what I mean by aging, the Aging in Place initiative of building a village here in Cleveland Park, in order for aging to exist, it must take off and fly and become its own independent entity. So one of the challenges is to move the aging committee from a committee of the Cleveland Park Citizens Association, one that's being supported and both financially and with a lot of person hours, to its own independent 501c3 entity, because only then can it begin to engage in fundraising. It has to, you know, has to form a board. It has to get money. It has to hire an executive director. And the most recent visible activity of the aging committee, the formation committee, was that we prepared and distributed and now have tallied a survey. A survey was distributed to 2,500 households in Cleveland Park. Several apartment, condominium, and cooperative buildings were included in that. We used aging used as its boundary for this, the Cleveland Park Club boundaries, which were more expansive than CPCA's or the Historical Society or John Eaton School, for that matter, so that these surveys were distributed across Wisconsin Avenue, for example, at McLean Gardens and Vaughn Place, and they were distributed all the way up to Tilden and all the way down to Woodley and all the way across to the park. We distributed, as I mentioned, 2,500 surveys. We received almost 400 responses, which is really quite extraordinary. And the response was overwhelmingly in support of building a village in Cleveland Park. So the formation committee has met. There will be a much more detailed meeting for just people who are interested in aging come September, because during this summer, the formation committee has decided to move forward in applying for 501c3 status to appoint some directors. It is in need of leadership. We need to have a chair and perhaps a co-chair for the board of directors for the village in Cleveland Park. But we have lots of people who are determined to make this thing to complete the vision, to make it real. We have lots of people who are interested in taking on discrete tasks. We have, for example, an attorney who's handling all of the legal work to file the 501c3. We have people who have been extremely active in the demographic work that needs to be done in determining what our membership base might look like. We've got people who are involved in communications and outreach. We are going to need people who are interested in helping fundraise, but we need a visionary who has organizational skills to pull this effort together. And that's what is going to be, that's a huge goal for this summer, is to identify that person or persons. So that was our most successful effort to engage and expand membership. It was quite interesting. In the aging meetings, attendance ranged from 35 to 60 reliably, as opposed to what we're looking out at tonight, which is, you know, 15 to 20 reliably at our monthly meetings. So that really tells us something about how people choose to spend the precious resource of time. People want to spend time on a particular initiative that they're invested in. but to just come and hear about how the association is doing. There's really our smaller core group who is interested in investing their time that way. Very interesting lesson. The third and final goal that we specified last September was membership outreach. And by this I mean primarily technological improvements, rebuilding the website, and to develop more sophisticated electronic means of electronic communication. We were not so successful in this. We don't have a new website yet, but we are on our way. I'm very happy to say that we've got Gabe Feineman and a small committee group who have spent many, many hours investigating servers who can host, because we're trying to amass a comprehensive look at what it is that we're going to want our website to do for us for years to come. And Gabe has been extraordinarily helpful in doing the research to figure out what different servers have to offer us. And I think I can say with great confidence that come the fall, middle, maybe the end of the fall, we will have a new website for the Cleveland Park Citizens Association. So as far as the three objectives that we presented to you all last September, I feel like I don't know how I'd grade us, maybe a B. You know, we did really well in two. We didn't do so hot in the third. But overall, we're getting there. I feel like we're making progress. The idea here is we're not rebuilding the association by a long shot, but we are trying to revisualize this association and how it can become more relevant to more people in this community. So what else have we been busy with? Well, we did an awful lot of administrative sort of housekeeping work. We have now, we changed our fiscal year last September, if you recall, so that it's more in keeping with how we actually operate, and particularly how we renew membership. We have applied for 501c3 status with the IRS, and we're waiting to hear back on that. We purchased insurance for the first time, so we are now insured. And we are now completely prepared to file our first ever tax return. So I feel that we're in much better shape just from a housekeeping standpoint. And then, of course, throughout the course of the year, there are always neighborhood issues that kind of pop up that some, you know, you may not anticipate. So how did we do with those? Well, the first was we learned that Engine 28, our beloved fire station, was going to get some much-needed renovation work. We worked very hard with the FEMS, which is the new code for the fire department. It's the Fire Emergency Management Services. We worked very hard with them to identify temporary space for Engine 28 within some proximity to its current location, and we were unsuccessful. There just wasn't a 20,000 square foot, relatively flat piece of property where they could put up some temporary Quonset huts and for equipment and trailers for the men. So they actually just closed us down and have distributed the equipment to three nearby fire stations. We've been working awfully hard with Chief Jordan, who's in charge of their facilities management section, to work on getting this RFP together to put out so that we can get construction companies in line, ready to bid to build our new, renovate our new fire station. It's almost there, is my understanding from Chief Jordan. They've bundled together the renovation of our station and also the one on MacArthur Boulevard, because they felt that if they offered a bigger job, then they would get a better response rate from higher quality contractors than FEMS has experienced in the past. I think that that's a good strategy, but apparently it's been very difficult trying to get everybody who needs to bless this RFP to actually bless it. But every week I get an email from Chief Jordan saying it's going to be on Friday, and then on Monday it's going to be this Friday. So supposed to be this Friday. We'll see, but they're supposed to be very close. Another issue was all of the layoffs that we that this library has experienced, and the effect on the Friends of the Library. Very happy to announce that one of the candidates for at-large membership on our new board is Trish Savage, who is the president of, or is that the title, president of the Friends? Well, are you the president or chair of the Friends of the Library? So this is absolutely wonderful. So we'll hopefully, the library has been such an important part of this community, and it has a very long-standing important relationship with the CPCA. So we hope to strengthen that this year. Another one was the National Cathedral School. The National Cathedral School had negotiated a usage agreement many, many years ago, almost a decade ago, with the Cleveland Park Citizens Association that essentially restricted the school's ability to lease out their new athletic facility to outside users. And the reason for that was when NCS first announced its plan to build new athletic facilities, there was a lot of concern, particularly among neighbors adjacent to the property, that they were building something bigger than what their program actually required, and that the intent was to lease it out as a revenue-producing resource. And NCS assured people that that was not their intent, and therefore entered into negotiations for a usage agreement that held them to the requirement that they only lease it out at certain numbers, certain day, hours of the day and certain days of the week. And NCS approached CPCA last December asking for modifications to the agreement. Some of the modifications were indeed to expand the use for their own program, things like opening up the building at 6 in the morning instead of 7 on weekdays for the use of their own staff. But most of the requests had to do with expanding the use for outside users. And we felt very strongly that there had been a committee, a liaison committee that had been established that is comprised of neighbors and of members of the Cathedral Foundation and the school and the Historical Society and the ANC and the CPCA. That committee had not been meeting regularly, and it had there was no basis for any kind of data collection on how successful the usage agreement had been thus far. We only had letters from 20 neighbors saying the impact is terrible, and then we had NCS saying, no, we've made great strides in reducing the impact. So it was sort of a he said, she said situation, and we felt we had no choice but to say no. We can't bless any modifications at this point, which would require a whole new order from the Board of Zoning Adjustment. So we've now revived the liaison committee into a much more active role. We're meeting regularly, and we are trying to build a strong relationship between all of the stakeholders so that in the future, if there are any questions or modifications, we'd be in a much better situation to evaluate the impact. Then we've got the Connecticut Avenue project, which I'm happy to say has been moving along, but as most of you probably are aware, there's been an awful lot of chatter on the big Cleveland Park listserv, as well as a little bit on our internal Cleveland Park Citizens Association listserv. So let me back up and tell you about the Connecticut Avenue project. We learned that Mary Che had quite successfully had the D.C. City Council allocate $1.5 million for a streetscape and pedestrian safety improvement project between Macomb and Porter Streets on Connecticut Avenue in 2009. That money went to the Department of Transportation. We formed a coalition, we meaning the CPCA, formed a coalition, a new committee, the Connecticut Avenue Coalition Committee, that was comprised of all the stakeholders in Connecticut Avenue, just coincidentally, we didn't even know that this $1.5 million existed. We formed that committee in December of 2009, and in January of 2010, we learned about the fact that there was $1.5 million that DDOT was about to spend on our avenue. And so all of a sudden, we had something to do. And what we decided to do was work with DDOT and convince DDOT that we, the Connecticut Avenue Coalition Committee, was perfectly poised to solicit input from all of our various constituencies, ANC, Historical Society, business owners, property owners, concerned citizens, that we would be able to gather the input on what people could identify were the problems down on Connecticut Avenue. We submitted that input to DDOT. DDOT then made a list of proposed solutions for all of the problems that the community identified. And we had a big meeting at Addis Israel a year ago last April where people grouped in tables of 10, and we listened to all of the information provided by DDOT, and all of the DDOT people were there and available for questions, and then each table had a scribe and a facilitator, and they decided which of how they were to place each of DDOT's suggestions into one of three categories: accept, reject, or accept with qualifications or modifications. And then we used the written and oral reports from those tables of 10 to create what was called a purpose and need document, which summarized the findings, the reports of all of these tables. And that document was submitted to DDOT. The ANC also used the reports to formulate a resolution that was passed at the next meeting. And by the way, the ANC also had open meetings about this whole process. And that purpose and need document and the ANC resolution serve together as the basis, the blueprint for all of the work that is currently underway on Connecticut Avenue. So that's why we are getting new streetlights. We will get a mid-block crosswalk. We'll have new trees and tree boxes. We have some what's called lead pedestrian intervals where the street lights, the traffic lights at our three intersections have been re-engineered so that the lights all are red simultaneously for 6 seconds. That enables pedestrians to actually start their trek across the street before any car is able to move in any direction, and gives people a little bit of a jump before they have to deal with oncoming traffic or turning traffic. We're going to be working, we hope, with two private owners to do some public-private collaboration on improvements. One of them is the Exxon station, and the other one is Federal Realty and their parking lot. Another thing that we decided, we as a whole community decided, was that we realized that $1.5 million wouldn't come close to even beginning to re-engineer the three intersections or to do anything about the service lane. We also learned that all of those features and several others, parking, the width of sidewalks, street furniture on sidewalks, all this stuff is so integrally interconnected that it didn't make sense to not to do a comprehensive plan, that we as a community simply don't have the expertise to make good decisions about how to re-engineer this stuff, and that what we really needed was to get the assistance of an urban planner to help us as a community develop a comprehensive plan for this commercial area of Connecticut Avenue and Cleveland Park. So we voted to set aside $250,000 to hire a consultant and get a plan done. So I wrote a response on the Big Cleveland Park listserv in response to many people's expression of the service lane being either for it or against it. because one of the things that I've learned in the year that we've been doing work together on coalition is that I don't know what I don't know, and that it may not be a question of keeping the service lane or eliminating the service lane. There may be a way to have some kind of a shared road. There may be other alternatives. It just so happens that Europe is full of obsolete streets that have been re-engineered into multi-purpose roadways, and that there are a lot of people that know a whole lot about this stuff, and there are a lot of things that you can do actually with parking, including different types of meters and different where meters can actually charge different rates for the first hour versus the second hour versus the third hour. So you can encourage, you can allow for short-term parking so people can zip in and out and get their service park so that they can use more neighborhood service-oriented businesses, like, you know, if you need to bring your vacuum cleaner in to Brothers, or if you need to buy a bunch of stuff at Wake Up Little Susie, or you're going to pick up a big chandelier at Artisan Lamp. You can park for a short period of time without spending an inordinate amount of money and, you know, carrying around 5 pounds of quarters. Though, if you want to park for 4 hours and catch a movie and dinner, that you can do that. But you're going to be paying a rate that's closer to what you'd pay at a parking lot, which is, you know, sort of fair. So there are lots of things to learn about, lots of things for us all to learn about. The RFP is going to be written, talk to our planner at DDOT, and they anticipate starting work on this sort of now through the fall, and that it would be put out in the fall, and then we would, I don't know exactly how we would structure the gathering of community input, but I am assuming that one model seemed to work last time was similar to what we did with the $1.5 million project, that we would solicit input. And I love all the comments on the listserv, and actually, you know, we've been cutting and pasting and capturing every single one of them, but so that we'd get even more input, and then we would get responses back from the consultant on what our options are, have plans drawn, and then we'd meet as a community so that we are working together and we're taking into consideration the needs of the entire community, not just the residents, not just the property owners, not just the business owners, but everybody, and including people who come in from out of our neighborhood who want to shop or eat. How do we handle all of that? So that's a project that is definitely on board for this coming year that we're very excited about. Let's see, where else? That's sort of, I think, where we are and what we've done, what we've been working on throughout the course of the year. And now I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what we as the executive committee have discussed needs improvement. And then I'd really like to get your input on what needs improvement. First, we feel that we need to do better about programming for relevant topics for membership meetings. That, you know, we didn't focus all that hard. We had some meetings. We had a joint forum with three other citizens associations. We had a forum on the budget where we had Chairman Kwame Brown and Council Member Mary Che and Phil Mendelson come and discuss the budget. We had a great meeting on zoning. We had a meeting on crime. We had a but we need to do a better job in selecting ahead of time good topics. And by the way, I also think it would be helpful, but I'd love your input too, if we were to set a fixed date and time for membership meetings so that everybody gets it in their brain that, you know, the third Wednesday of the month, we meet at such and such a place at such and such a time. I don't know how you all feel about that, but we thought that might be a good idea. We feel that the leadership of CPCA needs to do a better job in becoming more actively engaged in the Citizen the Federation of Citizens Association, and actually the city in general. We've relied pretty much on Ann Loikow to keep us appraised of what's going on in the city that might impact Cleveland Park and others too. But we've received wonderful input from Judy Saul and from Ann Loikow on that. We need to be more proactive in engaging and understanding what issues are out there in the city that may impact Cleveland Park. You know, think, for example, about smart meters, all of the information that's been floating around on the internet, I mean, on the listserv lately about smart meters, and zoning. You know, we had the meeting on zoning. We have zoning issues right here, not just residential, but also commercial. And then lastly, communications and outreach. You know, historically, we've used flyers. We've done snail mail. Now we're starting to use much more heavily electronic mail for all of our announcements. I mean, is there anybody in this room that wishes to receive their information, their communications from CPCA by snail mail? Anybody want to still prefer? Oh, hang on 1 second. Let me give you a... For podcast purposes. And it's like an ice cream cone.
It's on. Because I get email, but I also get deluged by emails, so things get lost easily. I was just going to suggest that it would help maybe to put something in the Northwest Current on a regular basis. I'm sure you could talk Davis Kennedy into a column maybe to say what we're doing, when the meeting times are. And they'll publish all that for free because it's news. And it's because there are a lot of people who don't have email, and they tend to be the older part of the community. And also a lot of us who get 50 or 100 a day, that you just it just gets lost. And so if I'm reading the Current and I see, oh, the CPCA meeting's tonight, then I'll show up and I'll remember. But there, we have so many busy people that having multiple ways to find out and remember something is really a help. And I would say that's a real good neighborhood asset that is easy to use. And if you work something out either for a regular column or just in their notices and stuff, you can send it up until Monday night, and it'll make the paper that's distributed on Wednesday. But more ways than one really helps, because we're all inundated with much too much to remember and keep track of. And
so you're in favor of both electronic and snail mail?
Some people will need snail. I mean, some of your older people, yeah, of snail mail, because one of the things that sort of concerned me when you were talking about the regular Cleveland Park listserv and all the stuff about the access road, a lot of people here, the population is growing. We're getting a big influx of younger people, and they're just looking at the census, you can see sort of demographically what's happening. But people forget that they too will grow old, and that your needs are different and your physical capabilities are different depending upon your age. I mean, I can remember when I was 25 and I biked to law school all across downtown and everywhere, but I don't do it at 62, you know? And it's the same with getting notice and how you learn about things. You know, there's different things that people do at different stages of their life. And we need to sort of kind of keep that in the back of our minds, because we all hope to go through all of those stages. So having multiple ways of finding out about things is useful and will help you bring in different segments of the population.
Yeah, thank you, Anne. You know, it brings to mind the last coalition, Connecticut Avenue Coalition Committee meeting that we had. We invited Commander Reese and the new officer who is in charge of all of our beat patrols, because there's some concern that there's actually statistically not an uptick in crime, but you know, we are really trying to keep tabs on crime, particularly down on Connecticut Avenue. There is a phenomenon of if you build it, they will come, and we do have more people. We've got, a better thriving commercial strip than we've had for a while on Connecticut Avenue, and there are more people. And one thing that Commander Reese said, we asked him what was different about this particular hub. I mean, you're all aware that along Connecticut Avenue, it was actually planned this way, where you've got a little commercial hub and then a strip of residential homes, and then you've got another commercial hub and then a strip, and that was planned by laid out with the streetcars. Anyway, Commander Reese said, we have a denser population here in Cleveland Park than even down at Woodley or Van Ness or Chevy Chase Circle or around Nebraska Avenue, because we have a higher number of apartment buildings and condominiums. And I hadn't thought of that. He said, you know, you've got a lot more pedestrian stuff that happens here, which is very interesting. On from just a residential basis, he's not talking about people who come into the neighborhood from outside, but there's just, there are more people about, which was interesting to me. So that's very helpful, just to know that multiple means of, you know, of reaching out and communication. Let me just share something that I certainly struggle with, and this is true as I've been watching all the information on the listserv about the of Connecticut Avenue, and it was certainly true when there were a lot of posts about the National Cathedral School. There were people who were posting on the list, on the big listserv, well, gee, I'd love to be able to use it as a neighborhood gym. Why is the CPCA against people using NCS as a neighborhood gym? And that, you know, that was just beside the point. NCS has never offered the use of its facility as a neighborhood gym, and that wasn't anything that was on the table in the discussions. So one of the things that I struggle with is the extent to which the leadership of CPCA must inform and engage people who are not members of the association in what it is that we're doing. And I do feel that there is a need for that. But I don't fully understand yet the extent of what that need is, with the obligation of it. And the use of it I see only when something happens, when there's some kind of a blow up of an issue. Just sort of on an ongoing basis, it slides. And I'd love to hear thoughts about that. I mean, one thing we can do is truly discuss this if anybody has some ideas and wants to speak into a microphone. The other thing is, I put some index cards out at the sign-in table, and if you aren't comfortable speaking into the microphone and sharing your inner thoughts with all of us, please jot down any suggestions or ideas on one of these index cards. And also email me anytime, because I really would like to hear. This is a puzzle for me, because I think that the association functions best when it has an awful lot of communication with its members. I think it also, you know, as it becomes more relevant and as we try to recruit more members, we need to have this kind of outreach, and I'm just not sure where exactly the lines need to be drawn. Lastly, is just the question of new initiatives, and you mentioned about the fact that the demographics are changing. We're getting younger people in the neighborhood, and also the way that you live changes over time. I mean, I moved to Cleveland Park when I was 22 years old and single, and lived in an Efficiency and Quebec house. And I can assure you, what was running through my mind then, and how I thought about living here and walking up and down Connecticut Avenue and through the neighborhood, the residential areas, completely has changed in the 35 years subsequent to that. So I'd love to hear thoughts about ways that we can more actively engage families with young children, younger single people, just younger people, getting a broader demographic here. And then last but not least, two for me, is Wisconsin Avenue. I feel that we've made great strides along Connecticut Avenue in building a coalition of folks who now has enough of a working relationship. I mean, there really isn't a whole lot that happens on the avenue that isn't shared among all members of this coalition, so that doesn't get out to the business community and doesn't get out to the Historical Society and doesn't get out to the ANC and doesn't get out to CPCA as well as other residents. And I think that that's a good thing. I think that to the extent that we all are invested in and understand the importance of our commercial areas, that's a good thing. We don't have that going for us on Wisconsin Avenue. And Wisconsin Avenue is about to undergo substantial change, and some of it is going to be hard to bear. I mean, there's really going to be just a dearth of any kind of commerce there. How do we come together as a community to support whatever commerce is there during that during the period of time of construction? How can we make the construction go more easily? And to what extent, you know, if we have any credibility left with anybody anywhere, does our neighborhood, our community, work with developers to make this as good as it can possibly be for our community? So I would love to see a kind of a coalition develop that works for Wisconsin Avenue, just like we've developed one that works for Connecticut Avenue. So now I'm seeing all kinds of hands being raised. It's on.
I agree with you that the CPCA hasn't had much of a presence on Wisconsin Avenue, and the presence that it has had over the Giant has been pretty unfavorably received by a lot of people that are up toward that end of the neighborhood. But I guess I would just like to say that I think that if you want to go in that direction, you have to reconsider the boundaries of the current organization, because otherwise it will just be perceived as CPCA butting in once again to the end of the neighborhood that it really, you know, has no business butting into.
I have nothing to say about Wisconsin Avenue. You know, when you live on this side of 34th Street, you're much more Connecticut Avenue focused. So you folks, I mean, that's part of the issue. You know, 34th Street really is a divide in the neighborhood, so it's one of those things we ought to think about. A couple of different thoughts. One is, I think on communications that what we need to do is tantalize people who are not members of the CS Association with enough information so that they want to become more involved, and then members get the full picture. And just as we now have about to be on the board a representative from the Friends of the Library, maybe we ought to think about somebody from the John Eaton HSA or somebody from one of the big apartment buildings like, you know, the Broadmoor, and think about them not necessarily as representatives, but more of bringing a different perspective than those of us who have lived in the neighborhood a very long time, who have a certain perception of what Cleveland Park is. So, I mean, I can just sort of tick off at the top of my head. You know, they're all over those apartment buildings. We've got several schools. We just have a lot of different institutions in the neighborhood. And maybe CPCA becomes more of an umbrella where all of these different institutions can come together to think about overall neighborhood issues.
Well, I just want to back her up. I think, indeed, how many of you live in one of the condo buildings? Nobody. And that we used to have in the past. That's true. Particularly the Broadmoor. Where have they all gone? So, yes. And the...
As someone who tried very hard 2 years ago to get into those apartment buildings and sign up members for the CPCA, it is extremely difficult. I mean, we do have a lot of apartment buildings around here, but to get into them and do something on a practical level is very difficult. I would think we'd probably do better just by putting out a monthly newsletter and distributing that through the stores and the places where these people go to be able to get in, and try to lead people from the monthly newsletter back to the website. But that means that we need people to write a monthly newsletter. And And that's a very difficult thing, too. That's right.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, Gabe, because that was something else I learned in working on the aging in place. We too worked very hard to get into apartment buildings, condominiums, and co-ops, and we had some success, mainly because people, particularly, it was so interesting, many of the property managers, who are the ones that control access, were so concerned about a lot of their residents and felt that there was no safety net for them internally within the apartment building complex, and they showed signs truly of visible relief that there was going to be some kind of organization membership that their tenants could belong to, who would be watching out for them and checking up on them. But what they were excited about the prospect, and that was sort of a foot in the door to introduce perhaps some. And again, it brings it back to you have to find the topic, the subject that is relevant. And, I think that that's a huge challenge for us is to search for that.
Oh, I was going to talk about, I don't think we should discuss today the issue of communication with the community, because I think what that topic really is how we should interact with the Cleveland Park listserv, which has changed a lot over the last couple of years. I think it's no longer just Cleveland Park, and I think it's a business now. It's an enterprise. So I do think it's an interesting topic for us to discuss at a special meeting at a later date. So I do want to see it up on the board, but I don't think we can discuss it today. I think it would be too complicated. And perhaps we can invite Bill or Peggy to come in to talk to us, because they have set up policies about usage and access of the listserv, and I think I'm not familiar with them. I just see the effects. It's supposedly my daughters tell me that it is the biggest listserv of its kind in the country.
Largest one in the country, and he has over 10,000 subscribers.
Oh, right,
11. But how many emails does he get a day?
I'm saying it's not at all clear how large they are, because they don't take members off. If once you're a member, they never stop counting you. All right, and but still, yeah, I know they say that, but still they're fairly large. They're not large in the number of messages that they publish. All right, so for example, to the north of us, the Chevy Chase listserv publishes twice as many messages per month as the Cleveland Park listserv. If you go up on the Yahoo group, on the first page, they show you a record of how many messages they've had per day over the last month.
Can I make a comment about that? I agree with Anna that this is a subject that's really good for the board and maybe for under proper thinking a meeting. But just to share with you some personal stuff. I recently was trying to see if we could have people on the listserv indicate the street where they live, so we could have, you know, a little bit more knowledge of who was commenting in the neighborhood and who was the 11,000 everywhere else. And got two very long personal replies from Peggy Robin. The first one saying, I think Anna got this also, that administratively it would be terribly hard. They just to get people to put their name on it and not be anonymous is a very big administrative headache for the moderators. But the second one was more interesting, because she went on at great length about the fact that they really regard themselves more in the nature of a letters to the editor situation, in which editors make decisions about what to put on and not, and would try to have balance. And she did make some comments about the many, many emails they get every day and the proportion that they publish, and she referred to Chevy Chase, but she said, you know, we have 11,000 members and they only have much, much fewer, but they publish more. So the whole issue is something, as Anna said, that should be discussed, but if I can just throw in about communication and the houses, the apartment houses, everything you has been said I agree with. But it's true that we do have some members who live in the Broadmoor. We recently were at a historical association meeting where I sat next to three really hot people who were very active. And it's true that they're putting their energies now into the local, their own apartment. But I think properly contacted, some of those members might be good people for us to listen.
Can I add just one thing? On this title, we should emphasize that it's the CPCA listserv that we have concern about and how to beef up its use in the communications as opposed to CP.
Yeah, particularly now that we have this other membership category, associate member. You know, before only active members of the Cleveland Park Citizens Association could join our own CPCA listserv. Now, associate members can join. So if we make the CPCA listserv more relevant and engaging and tantalizing with information, then that may well be the answer to the issue about communication and drawing people in and not involving 8,000 people who don't live in Cleveland Park in the conversation. So
my problem and what I thought you were referring to, Susie, is the fact that sometimes the CPCA gets attacked on the large listserv for not only no good reason, but for maybe a bad or reason or uninformed. So we, one way or another, we do have to develop a policy for how to respond to this.
On communication, if I could just add a couple of things. I'd mentioned the Northwest Current. You talked about a newsletter. I would urge you I'm just so amazed at the stuff you've been doing, and I know how much time and effort all of you it takes, having done it for years. Think about using the Current, maybe getting a regular column. Then all you have to do is send in the text once a week or every 2 weeks or whenever you want it, that you think is appropriate, and somebody else handles the publishing and the layout and all that stuff, and you will say, and it has a much wider readership, and I think you will find it will get out farther than trying to do your own newsletter, because that is a tremendous amount of work. And I also just want to make a comment on the listservs. I mean, I've been disappointed seeing the largest Cleveland Park one basically become a list of services in selling and giving away stuff. And have had many, many, many postings rejected, which were about meetings or things that people would want to know about, but they thought weren't within their thing. And I think the CPCA listserv has a niche as a result, where it can actually be about substantive issues that matter to this community, that are not just in the community, but are citywide in addition. And that's why I think I want to encourage you to get really much more involved in the Federation and other citywide groups, because you will find the same issues are playing out all over the city. When I first started getting involved in all this stuff in my 20s, and I was in Foggy Bottom, and the big 900-pound gorilla was George Washington University and campus plans and, you know, all the offshoots of that. In this last election, they were all talking about AU, CU, you know, and it's the same issue as the cathedral. It's all these large institutions, and how do they fit into residential neighborhoods, and what are the trade-offs, and how are they regulated? I mean, and it's the same across the city, and so many of the rest of the stuff is. So if we look at the CPCA listserv as a way to plug people into what's happening here and how it connects to those issues that are happening in other neighborhoods and what's happening downtown and what the council is doing affecting us, so people can actually begin to understand how we fit into the larger picture and how these are getting solved or resolved, that you will attract all kinds of people who want to know the substance rather than how to sell their old frying pan or whatever it happens to be.
I just have a quick question.
It's hard to get a jump on Ann Likow, but the idea of some kind of a publication in the Northwest Current makes a lot of sense. and I was going to suggest that. As a matter of fact, you're really talking about a newsletter. It would be nice if you had a newsletter, and a few associations do that. It's a big job. And unfortunately, when the Palisades newsletter comes to me on a complimentary basis, the material is usually pretty stale. So that's an issue that you have to deal with. And it's a lot of work to put together a newsletter. And on the other hand, if you had space, if you bought space in the Current, or if they gave it to you on a pro bono basis or on a discounted basis, it might be a lot cheaper than trying to produce a newsletter, and circulation is taken care of. But then that reminds us that the Northwest Current not only is delivered, presumably delivered to our house every Wednesday, it isn't, but if it isn't, you know where to get it. You can get it at the local stores. Now, the local stores can be our allies in this kind of thing. So even if you didn't have a newsletter or didn't have an ad or a column in the Current, you could distribute information through the local stores. So that's another idea. And I think I get on a daily basis this thing from Politico, this playbook thing from Politico. It's not fancy. It's just plain type. It's a lot of junk, but it comes every day, and I read it. And apparently, a lot of Washington reads it as well. So you can do something as simple as that that doesn't require any makeup. It doesn't require any design, and it doesn't have to be every day. But the question is, who would get it? I think that anybody who has given us his email address, that person should assume that we're going to contact them. I don't think I'm a strong believer in online privacy, but I think anybody who gives you their address can expect to be contacted. So I think we underutilized that capability in the past 2 years. I think we could do more about that. Obviously, it's a big subject, and you're not going to solve it today, but you have to think outside the box. And the Current might be very interested to see associations pick up on this idea.
Right.
And it's a form of coverage.
I just wonder how much penetration they have into the apartment buildings. They do? Okay.
Well, it's better than anything we're going to have, I can assure you.
Okay.
I think that's about as good as you're going to get, I would think. Anybody who's interested is going to read it.
They're gated communities. You cannot get into them. However, the Northwest Current comes on a regular basis to many of them.
Are there any other thoughts? You know, if you have another thought, like I say, there are index cards back at the Ruth handed them out. Thank you. And then you can always reach me by email or phone. But I think two more comments.
In terms of programs to get people from apartments out, if you need to think about what are they interested in, first one that comes to mind, and some of them, you know, you are the condos that are owned, and others are rental. Well, first is affordable housing. We have a lot of rental laws and how those apply. The stuff on the smart meters, I mean, utilities, master metering of buildings. If you think about it and advertise the issues as a way that apply to those buildings as well as to private single-family homes, then people start getting interested and are likely to show up. And there are a whole lot of things if you start taking the issue apart and figuring it out. All I can say is, speaking from experience as someone who was in an apartment and was organizing apartments when I first started getting involved in all this stuff years ago, that there are a lot of people who are interested and will come. Just got to sort of think about the issues that hit them most and hit them in the pocketbook and or affect their health or welfare in one way or another.
I have a comment that's totally unrelated to anything we've been talking about recently, although I think sounds like there have been a lot of wonderful ideas here. But actually, I'm a little puzzled over the NCS situation and how – I know there's probably some whole history I don't know and I don't need to know at this point about how CPCA got itself into that position. But I think that maybe it's up to the board, but I would like to see going forward the board give some thought to whether CPCA should get itself into that situation as being the arbiter, the decision maker. I mean, I don't see much problem with being part of a group or sitting on a committee, but it just seems to me like a strange situation for CPCA to be in, and I think, I don't know, I'd like to see more thought given to that.
I can give you the facts as I know them for how CPCA got involved with that, Robbie, but the bottom line is where we are now, there is a Board of Zoning Adjustment Order, and in that order is incorporated, into that order is incorporated the usage agreement that was negotiated between the National Cathedral School and the Cleveland Park Citizens Association. So like it or not, any change that NCS wants to make to the use of its athletic facilities, we have to approve. They can't do anything without coming to us first. So, just going forward. Yeah, yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, well, the membership would have to be involved with that, I would think.
If I could add something, then Greg may want to, because we were both involved in it. It was much broader than CPCA, and I think it's been interpreted, the history has been sort of distorted a lot. CPCA got involved because of immediate neighbors, and we're trying to work something out. The ANC was very much involved. If you go back and read the order, because this was a special exception. Schools are not allowed as a matter, in the same sense, as a matter of right in a residential district. And so how they were putting this facility in, whether it complied with the zoning regulations and whatever, was a special exception that had to go to a public hearing. The final order had the ANC basically endorsed the CPCA conditions and added some of their own, and the NCS agreed to go with the stricter of the two. All of this was in the hearing, on the record, and is in the order. So it was something that happened over a period of years, and it involved all the groups in the neighborhood being involved. So it wasn't like CPCA said, we're the only people who can speak for people here. I mean, it was a much more complicated situation, and it was part of a legal process that had to do with the nature of the fact what you have is a special exception, and on the statutory basis is include looking at the impact on the surrounding community and the neighbors and giving them certain rights to participate.
We better move on then, folks, unless... Oh, yes, we can do one.
I was just saying this is the natural consequence of happening the NCS situation of the when Susie mentioned being open to the public and citizens coming in and forming their own committees and so forth or organizing, they approached the CPCA and it was referred to the committee that at that time just had a chair and they started picking up a few extra members and it was negotiated by members of the zoning committee of the CPCA as a response of people coming to the CPCA.
Thank you, Greg. And actually, it's wonderful to have your institutional memory because as the baton passes from one administration to the next, it's really important to have that connection. And speaking of Greg New, I was hoping, Greg, would you mind standing up here for a minute? Greg, I'd like to spring a little resolution on the entire gang that's here tonight. I'd like to propose a resolution to all of you and hold a vote afterwards. Be it resolved, a resolution of the Cleveland Park Citizens Association honoring Gregory R. New. Whereas Gregory R. New has served in many capacities over his years of service to the community as president of the Cleveland Park Citizens Association and as a valued officer for many years, and whereas he has been a vital and generous member of the board of the Tregaron Conservancy, and whereas He has served as president of the D.C. Federation of Civic Associations and has held virtually every elected office in that esteemed organization. And whereas he is a published author and a noted librarian who retired after 53 years of distinguished service with the United States Library of Congress, and whereas many consider him among the treasured deans of civic activism in the nation's capital, therefore, be it resolved that Gregory R. New is to be honored on this day, June 16th, 2011, at the annual meeting of the Cleveland Park Citizens Association as he takes his leave of the city he has served so well. Do I hear a motion to adopt the resolution? Do I hear a second? All those in favor? Any opposed? The resolution passes unanimously.
Little something for you, which is the resolution.
Well, thank you. I was in Georgia visiting my sister when I heard of the award that I got from the Civic Federation, the Citizens Federation, at their luncheon last month, and that hit me as a surprise, and this hits me as even more of a surprise. Now, thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg. Next, I want to introduce you to the candidates. We'll hold the elections now, and if I could ask Jeremy Scher to come up, who is going to... thank you. Jeremy has agreed, he's part of our nominations committee and has agreed to serve as the officer in charge of elections. I want to first thank Pam Corbell and Margie Siegel, who served as co-chairs of the nominations committee. As I said, we were hoping to get a larger number of leadership, and we were successful. I think there's a great team. I cannot tell you how much I've enjoyed working with the executive committee this last year. It has been such an honor, such a privilege to work with a group of people who are incredibly smart. We're a great team because we complement each other well. Everybody brings their own skill set to the table, and there's a lot of respect and there's a lot of fun. And the common denominator, of course, is that we all are deeply in love with Cleveland Park. So it's been a lovely, lovely experience for me. And now we're going to expand. And so our officer candidates this year are Susie Taylor for president, Ann Hamilton for vice president, Ruth Kaplan for second vice president, John Corbell as our treasurer, Gabe Fineman as our recording secretary. And for at-large candidates, we have Clark Madigan, who couldn't be with us tonight, but has served on the executive committee for 2 years. Jeff Davis, who also couldn't be with us tonight, but who served on the executive committee for 1 year. Trish Savage, who I mentioned before, is with the Friends of the Library. Mark Rosenman, who couldn't be with us tonight, but is a very active, engaged citizen. And Anna Evans, who is with us tonight. So this is your slate. I do have write-ups of all of us, little bios. They're in the back. And if you'd like to read up on any of us before you cast your vote, please go ahead and do so. But I'm going to turn the microphone over to Jeremy to post our elections.
Hi. Thank you, Susie. One thing just, I think, to... Is this... to confirm is that Anna, I believe, is actually nominated for the position of corresponding secretary, correct? As opposed to just the order. So for those who were listening on the podcast, I think just real quick, I realize we don't have a lot of time, might be helpful just so people understand how the new articles and bylaws work as far as the election. As Susie mentioned, there are now 11 members of the board, and they're all elected for a one-year term, and the delegates to the Federation are no longer elected. Instead, they'll be appointed by the incoming board. The way the nominees are selected is the existing, in this case, the executive committee going forward will be the board, selects a nominating committee. The nominating committee seeks out members who wish to serve. They select a slate. This is to be done at least 30 days before the actual election. And then any other member who wishes to serve can submit a petition signed by 10 other members within 14 days of the election. We received no petitions this year. The significant change is that there are no longer to be any nominations from the floor or write-ins. Instead, people will know at the election or before the election who is to be voted upon. I have ballots, but unless, I guess now I'm going to be the recording secretary, do you want a record? Or the easiest thing to do, I think, in this circumstance is just to take the slate by acclamation. So moved. Do we hear a second? All in favor? All opposed? The ayes have it. And congratulations to the new slate.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. Appreciate it. Yes, a technical question from George Idelson.
I'm currently a delegate to the Federation, Citizens Federation. There are two federations, the Civic and the Citizens Federation. We will be having a meeting later on this month, and if I get reappointed or rechosen, that's fine, but I don't know what your timetable would be for selecting delegates.
So, George, I feel very strongly that we can just appoint you right here and now.
I would suggest that anybody who is serving continues to serve until they're replaced. That would be my view. Yes, definitely.
All right, so for the podcast record, we've determined that those that are currently serving as delegates will continue to serve until they're replaced, but I also think that as a matter of courtesy, that a member of the board will contact each delegate and make sure that they are happy to continue in that role. So that's what we'll do. And George, thank you for keeping us all. Okay, thank you. We will pay attention to that. But for now, you are the delegate for the next year. Evelyn has a question.
Susie, I know that you gave great thanks to your executive committee. I would just, as a member of the association, want to say how much we really do appreciate the work that was done, not only by you, but by all of the members of the committee who are here tonight and those who aren't. A lot was done, even more than you talked about, and we're very, very grateful for it. And we look.
That's very nice. Thank you. And last but not least, I wanted to invite Jean Massey to come up. Many of you are aware that there has been a back and forthing in downtown on the nomination of a person to fill the position of People's Council. And Jean is going to come up and talk to us about the importance of the People's Council. That office had been held for many years by a woman named Betty Noel. Mayor Fenty dismissed her, and nominated a person of his choice to fill that position. That nomination did not pass at the city council level. She was not approved. And Mayor Gray has now nominated a new person to serve as the People's Council, a woman named Sandra, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, Matevos Fry. And it is our hope that you will approve us going down on June 24th to testify in support of Ms. Matevos Fry's nomination. Jean's going to get up and talk to you a little bit about that, and then I'd like to take a vote on that support. Her the information about this has been posted on our website. This is another one of those tricky things I was mentioning about before. We learned about this nomination after our last members' meeting. So this is an issue of communication. How do we get it out to the membership so that we can inform the membership, educate them well enough to know whether or not this person is worthy of our support, and then hold a vote to give us the authority to go down and testify one way or the other. So Jean's going to talk about this for a moment.
Yeah, I'll try to keep this brief. We were solicited to...
Is this better? We were solicited to testify in support of this nomination, and Susie wasn't able to go down to the meeting to meet her, so she asked me if I'd go, so I went, and when I got to this little meeting, David Espensheet was there, and so, excuse me, Peter Espensheet was there, so I sat next to him, and he gave me all of the blow-by-blow of what happened with Betty Noel and what happened with the replacement for Betty Noel, and this Ms. Fry is the former deputy to Betty Noel, and so Peter spoke very highly of her, but my information about her is only that she's been in the office for a long time, and she knows what she's doing, theoretically. And so I think there are really two questions. One is, as a matter of policy, do we want to get involved in going down before the council and testifying about various nominees? I think she was reaching out to people to support her in light of the history of what happened to the previous nomination and wants to get, you know, generate support throughout the community for her. The reason that it struck me as potentially worthwhile is that I believe that the CPCA should get a little more engaged in the city and shouldn't be completely parochial in its outlook. So I think that by helping her out, we can establish relationship with her that will allow us to be engaged in what's going on in that office. Now, what is that office all about? The office is the other half of the utility industry. The Public Service Commission makes the rules about PEPCO and smart meters and all the other things, reliability issues, and it also deals with the gas company. It doesn't deal with the water company. The water is a separate issue. But the utilities go down to the Public Service Commission, and they make their case for whatever changes they want. And the public, the People's Council is supposed to be on the other side of that discussion and to represent the interests of the consumer, and that's the job, so that we have a kind of two-sided discussion in front of the Public Service Commission. So that's what I know about the background. This person apparently, although I don't know her, I attempted to get input by asking people to comment, anybody who knew her, engaged with her. I didn't get much. In fact, I could talk a little conversation with Ann, and that was it about the background. So I think it's a little difficult for us to get out too much on this unless we have some factual basis for our positions. But on the other hand, I think that supporting the concept of the People's Council and the integrity of the process is worth doing. So that's what I have to say, and I'd like to get other people's commentary on this.
A couple of things, and I think I agree with about everything you said. CPCA has traditionally been involved in testifying on nominees for all kinds of offices in the city before the city council. And we did testify, I don't know, half a dozen times probably on supporting Betty Noel as People's Counsel. And in fact, one of the programs we used to regularly have was to have her or her staff come and talk to us about utility issues and when they were going through deregulation and how, you know, what energy saving, and because they do all kinds of things to help consumers. And traditionally, that office has been one of the few offices in the district government that was well run, knew it was operating the public interest, and speaking up for DC ratepayers, energy consumers, and it also includes Verizon for the landline part. And you could get them to handle any kind of complaint you had about any of those to help you track it down. I mean, they were your ombudsman for your complaints against Pepco, Washington Gas, and Verizon. And their consumer affairs people will work with whatever kind of issues you have, whether it's billing disputes or whatever. As you mentioned on the history of the replacement for Betty, who was a person who had none of the requirements for the job, other than being licensed as a lawyer. Sandra has been her longtime deputy and has had her career in the Office of People's Counsel and has all the things the other nominee didn't, in that she knows utilities law. She is a litigator. She has litigated these cases, including the major rate case, $50 million rate case against Pepco that's been going on for the last couple of years. I don't know her as well as I know Betty Noel, but Betty thinks very highly of her, which is gold-plated as far as I'm concerned in terms of the quality of the person and the staff. And anybody who knew Betty knew she was fiercely independent. She was beholden to no one but the public, and she stood up for us, which was why she was basically edged out by Mayor Fenty. Because there was this major rate case there, and some of our big campaign contributors happened to be utility companies. So from consumer point of view and the Citizens Association point of view, we want someone who will understand this very arcane subject matter, which is, and if you've ever been involved in utility hearings or looked at any of the pleadings, just your eyes glaze over, who will be an expert on them defending our interest. One of the things that's happened in deregulation, at least as far as I'm concerned, is we're all expected to be experts on 10,000 things that you didn't have to be before. And if you wonder where all your time goes, it's trying to figure out all this stuff that used to be, you just call up the electric company and you have one choice and you don't have to pick all this thing. So having a good people's counsel is really very important to district consumers, and I think we should testify, and I think just testifying on Sandra on her record and on her experience, and that they pick someone that's qualified. And if you look, I think it's in the press release, of who all the previous people's counsels have been. I mean, there's several judges among them. They've been really incredible people. And we want to keep very qualified people in that position.
I was wanting to say that if you're looking for precedent, the D.C. Federation of Civic Associations regularly testifies for the positions like this, including members of the Public Service Commission. Mm-hmm. You might ask one of the delegates from the citizens if that's true for the Citizens Federation.
I just wanted to add that I had a moment of hesitancy, as Susie knows, this is Ruth speaking, about whether as are applying for a 501c3, whether that would affect our ability to take a position on nominations like this for an administrative office. And I'm very pleased to report that this is not a problem, that we can do it. I've gotten this from a very good source who knows 501c3 law very, very well. So we don't need to hesitate in terms of our 501c3 application in taking a position on this. And I also wanted to thank Ann Loico for her comments. I think when we speak, we're being recorded, which is why we're always saying people have to have a mic. And I think going forward, it's really good if we would say our names when we speak for people who are going to listen to the recording afterwards, if people are comfortable doing that. I'm Ruth Kaplan.
I'm Robbie Cronin, and actually, I just had a question. What is the time frame on this? I mean, is there time?
The hearing is going to be on June 24th.
June 24th. Okay, so you do need a decision immediately. You can't float this on the listserv.
We'd already been floated, and we've asked for anybody who had any comments or thoughts to be in touch with us on the website.
Well, I think going forward, it probably should be floated on the listserv as well, because I certainly don't check the website.
Well, we tried. It just didn't happen. But this is Gabe, and I move that, because we're running out of time here, I move that we do get involved and that we support Sandra for this position.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
We have another comment? Please, we have another comment on an unrelated issue. New business.
Yes. Okay, this is Judy Hubbard. Many of you know that I was involved in weatherization, and I hope I'm a member of the Greening Committee here. Yes, there's some money available coming up for energy efficiency upgrades for the merchants and for residents. There's something called DCSEU. I'll give you some more information about it when I learn more, but essentially it is for $100, a single family home can get about $700 or $800 worth of upgrades such as new light bulbs, wrapping your water heater, installing low flow in your showers, things like that. So I will put it on the website. There'll be some more information. I just wanted to announce that there is some money coming right this summer for upgrades for not only the merchants, which is free, but also for $100 contribution for single family. This group, DCSEU, is looking for 200 homes in Northwest Washington.
And Judy, you're going to post this on the CPCA listserv?
Yes.
That would be great.
Yes. No, it's not an audit. I don't think there's any money for audits anymore through the Department of Energy.
Is there any kind of income requirement?
There's no income requirement.
That's great. Thank you. Is there any other new business tonight? One more piece. Yep.
And like, if I could just make an announcement. If anyone would like to join a lot of us who were supporting D.C. statehood on July 4th in the Palisades Parade. And you can come bearing any kind of sign you want. If you want to say, you know, Cleveland Park supports statehood or CPCA or whatever other group you belong to, it doesn't matter. There will be a group of us lining up on Whitehaven Avenues a little bit after 10. The parade starts at noon. And if you haven't been, it's the greatest hometown thing in D.C. For Independence Day for the rest of the country except us at the moment. But if you want to push for getting our rights back, please come join us and march with us. And if you really are up to it, they actually do have a contest on costuming and how people come. So that if you want to get particularly dressed up or bring your dog or your kids or put them on bicycles or whatever you happen to want to do, all you have to do is just come get in line. But there will be a group of us there marching for statehood. And you can throw candy and
Judy Hubbard, if anybody would like a Don't Tread on Me Congress sign, I have two at my house, 2938 Newark Street, and I also have a supply of them that I could get from a certain council person that I work for. So.
And one more thing, the board of directors will be meeting for the first time on June 29th for our orientation meeting and beginning a conversation of how we're going to, what our goals and objectives will be for this coming year. So if any of you have any ideas about what you'd like to see happen in CPCA, thank you so much for all of your thoughts and suggestions tonight. But if you have more, please contact me. You can call me or email me. And also talk to all your friends and neighbors and tell them the same thing and contact me, because we'd love to incorporate those ideas into our work plan. Thank you all so much for coming. Appreciate it. And have a good evening.